Metal's been an activist for a year and a half now. Got really involved since September 11th. And Metal, are you here with us?
Yes.
All right. Excellent. So welcome to the airwaves of Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Right on. It's good to be here.
We're an unlicensed pirate radio station broadcasting for 9 years, about to celebrate our birthday. So, yeah, thanks a lot for joining me. I kind of contacted you at the last minute and really do appreciate your time. And let's talk about the mobilization that's happening in San Francisco, June 3rd through 9th. Is that the correct
date? Yeah, that's it. It's sort of a unique confluence of events. There's the biotechnology, pharmaceutical industry's largest gathering of lobbyists worldwide. Is their annual gathering is happening in San Francisco this year from, I think, June 6th till the 9th. And the G8, the meeting of the group of eight most industrialized, wealthiest nations, is happening on the east coast of the U.S. in Georgia at that same time, from June 8th till, I think, the 10th or the 11th. And so on June 8th itself, there's going to be this sort of, there will be the puppeteers of the corporate lobbies meeting in San Francisco at the same time that their puppets are meeting in Georgia to discuss, you know, what the world's going to look like in the upcoming year, who's going to be waging wars, what foods people are going to be eating, all that sort of stuff. So it's a combination of the next large anti-corporate mobilization, as well as, you know, since it is the biotechnology and pharmaceutical industries that will be meeting in San Francisco, there'll be an emphasis on the ways that these groups in specific have made their effect on democracy or the voice of the people in the past years. And the other thing that we're really trying to do with this mobilization is make it clear that the solutions to the problems that we're being faced with as a society already all exist. You know, we can farm sustainably, we can farm organically, we can use permaculture, we can use biodiesel to drive around, we can have you know, communities developed in such a way that we don't need fossil fuel transportation as much. You know, all of these sorts of what we call now alternatives but are truly solutions to the problems that the world faces at large, they all exist, and we're going to really emphasize those in this mobilization. So we're not just saying no this time, we're really very loudly saying yes.
So you're saying that these alternatives are already in practice, like in the Bay Area?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's organic farmers all up and down the coast of California, certainly in the Bay Area. There are biodiesel collectives springing up all across the country, but, you know, again, certainly in the Bay Area. There's a movement to keep genetically modified crops out of biodiesel fuel, which is...
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely, because what we're seeing is people are starting to realize, hey, the fossil fuel economy, it's not going to last forever. So the biodiesel industry is starting to kick in, and a lot of big corporations are starting to take it over, and they're in bed with the genetically modified foods people, and there are smaller cooperatives trying to make sure that there's a space for non-genetically modified fuels.
Now, can you talk about Mendocino and the Measure H?
Yeah, absolutely. That's coming up for vote tomorrow. And it's another great case of how democracy is being subverted by corporate power. There's this grassroots initiative to ban any genetically modified plants from being grown in Mendocino County. The people that have been, you know, collecting the signatures to get it on the ballot and do the publicity, they're operating on a budget of about $70,000, of which most has come from donations of, I think, $1,000 or less, with the exception of, I think, a $20,000 grant that they got. On the other hand, the industry that's fighting against this has poured, last I heard, it was about $400,000 into the campaign to say, you know, hey, if you people in Mendocino County pass this law saying you can't plant genetically modified foods, you're going to be stuck with higher taxes, and you're not going to be able to be competitive when the rest of the world goes genetically modified, and all these sorts of freaky scare tactics.
I've read that Measure H is actually being emulated all across not only the nation, but even the world of local areas, local counties in this case, taking the initiative to ban GMOs. So I think it's really cool when one community, you know, put something together. Now I heard Humboldt is right next there in line to ban GMOs.
Right. Humboldt right now is collecting signatures. There's a movement starting forward in Sonoma County. Vermont, actually, the state of Vermont just had a vote on a moratorium for GMO planting this past Thursday, which was corrupted by corporate influence and wound up devolving from a vote to chaos in their legislative halls. You know, but people, it's great to see the people in America, like, learning about this stuff, starting to become aware of it enough to be upset about it, and really get into the issue of, you know, what's happening is these corporations are splicing genes from species that had never been able to mix before in their history, and getting them out to the market before they have any idea what the real side effects are. And they're doing a great job of buying off the FDA and faking test results to make sure that things look okay for when they, you know, when they do their sort of sham submissions to that agency. So it's really heartening to see people being like, wow, starting to stand up for their right to eat healthy food in America. And you're right, worldwide, it's, you know, we're definitely part of a huge movement to keep genetically modified foods out of our mouths, from Europe to Africa and South America and even Asia. There's just fantastic things happening with people saying, no, we do not want to eat this food that's, you know, genetically engineered. We don't know what effect it's going to have, and we do know that we don't trust corporations when they say, hey, it's all going to be okay, just trust us.
Well, how does biotechnology go beyond food?
Well, the biotechnology industry itself is focused on both genetically modified foods and biowarfare is a new aspect of it that's starting to blossom. There's a bioweapons research lab slated for development at Livermore, actually, right here in California, outside of the Bay Area. And people are starting to hear about it, and people are starting to really stand up to it. It just seems like a horrible, horrible idea to start creating new strains of virulent diseases that we're going to keep in our lab, that we're going to try to keep in our labs, and we have absolutely no guarantees that these things aren't going to wind up in the environment. And once these things are in the environment, there is no recalling. Which you've seen with the genetically modified foods thing, there was a brand of corn, Starlink, that's genetically modified that was not slated for human consumption that wound up being found out in a bunch of products about 3 years ago.
Taco Bell taco shells.
Yeah, exactly. And there was this huge recall initiated and all sorts of money lost by the people that had those, that were selling those products, and still we're finding Starlink genes in those, in our corn products when it's not supposed to be showing up. So when you take that model or that structure of things that happen and you apply it to something that's specifically designed to destroy human, animal, and plant life, it just boggles the mind that it's our tax dollars that are going to fund this. It's really, if we don't do something about it quickly, we're going to be at the cusp of a new arms race. With really staggering implications. And the way that ties in to corporate power issues in general, to the problems that are in general being caused in our country and in our world, just applies to the subversion of people's voice and subversion of the democratic process. You know, I mean, I hold no illusions that our quote-unquote representative democracy is a democracy, but when you see grassroots initiatives and referendums, which are really the last bastion of true democracy that we have, being defeated by just millions and millions of dollars of corporate backing being poured in. That's something that we see in biotechnology. It's something we see with, you know, the war in Iraq, with millions of dollars being poured in from the oil industry and the sort of reconstruction industry and the military industrial complex to make sure that the stories that we see in the media are all in a very narrow viewpoint. You know, and there's just sort of well-documented history of politicians being bought off by corporations as they as they're running for re-election, and then we wind up with a bunch of quote-unquote representatives that are nothing more than really puppets for these corporations. So that's the connection that we're trying to make with this mobilization, that we need to start, as a movement, we need to start standing up and saying, okay, the WTO is a symptom of corporate power. The you know, the two-party system is a symptom of corporate power, and we can really if we can really start focusing on these groups when their lobbies meet, we can really start making taking the next step and making an impact, especially if we're confronting them with the solutions to the problems that they're creating.
Now, I know that the pharmaceutical industry is a big player in the Bio conference. I'm at the Bio website. Testimonial. This is on the front page of bio.org. This meeting has grown from a humble beginning to the world's largest and most important venue for anyone with an interest in biotechnology, from corporate executives and Nobel laureate scientists to students. It's not just a place to be, but an opportunity to meet with and discuss the industry's opportunities and issues. It's the first thing I put on my calendar every year. It's not to be missed. Mr. G. Stephen Burrell, CEO of Burrell and Company. So, wow, that's a you know, just heart-wrenching testimonial there from Stephen.
Yeah,
Burrell.
Well, I mean, I just hope we all take it to heart and put it in our calendars as an event not to be missed.
Yeah, anyone who's interested in biotechnology. Now, I know that, like I was saying, the pharmaceutical industry, like Merck and, you know, the people that are making these drugs, what role do they play?
Well, the biotech, I mean, I really consider they're so tightly woven, the interests of the biotechnology and the pharmaceutical industry, that I really consider them as one whole. Pharmaceutical industry supplies most of the backing for this conference and is also the most powerful lobby in the United States, which makes it one of the most powerful political forces in the world, if you consider the United States as being the remaining superpower. So the direct ties to genetic engineering and biotechnology with pharmaceuticals are the new breed of biotechnology, biopharmaceutical plants. So what they do is...
Biopharmaceuticals, what's that?
That is the process of splicing in genes into, say, a rice plant to make that rice plant produce an antibody or a protein or something that will be useful once it's extracted in creating a pharmaceutical product like a drug. So it's a means of increasing the supply of the raw materials for pharmaceuticals to be able to make their drugs. It obviously has wide-ranging effects when you think about if a rice plant is producing something that's going to be used as a pharmaceutical, and that rice starts to mingle with the other rice population that is intended for human consumption, and we're eating all these vast amounts of raw pharmaceutical components, I mean, the effect that's going to have on our health is going to be pretty intense. And another illustration of how tightly woven these industries are is when we had President Bush talking about 2 years ago how we were going to send billions of dollars to Africa for AIDS relief, right? The money that was slated, earmarked to go over there, was contingent on the acceptance of two things, of the fact that only brand name drugs would be bought, only brand named AIDS drugs would be bought with this money. It wouldn't be any of the generics. And also, the African nations would have to accept genetically modified food. So it doesn't make any sense in my head, and I think in general in people's minds, to tie acceptance of AIDS relief to acceptance of genetically modified foods. But when you have these industries working so tightly together, that's the sort of legislative thing that you wind up seeing.
Well, some people in the United States and throughout the world may be saying to themselves, you know, beggars can't be choosers. If the United States offers genetically modified food to Africa and people are hungry, they'll eat it. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think the main problem is that comes from a standpoint that there isn't, like, that we are somehow creating, that we would somehow be creating via the use of genetic technology enough food for the people of Africa to have, when in fact we already are, as a world, growing enough food for populations, and the only reason that people are still starving is a matter of distribution. It's a matter of greed by the agro-business industry. So to look at the fact that we already have more food than, so the United States is already growing more food than we can consume within our borders, and that we can sell at market value around the world, when you look at that fact and the fact that there isn't an actual scarcity in food and that it's a problem of distribution, you have to consider, why would we be so excited about Europe or about Africa accepting genetically modified foods? And I got ahead of myself there, but one of the motivations for it is because of Europe's moratorium on genetically modified foods. If Africa accepted our GMO products, they would eventually, because they do so much trade with Europe as well, that would be another, you know, another means of pressuring Europe if we could get Africa to begin accepting our genetically modified food. So I think that realizing that the problem with world hunger is one of distribution and not scarcity is a beginning point of addressing that question.
I think that another aspect might be the patenting of the technology.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what comes along with the GMOs. Like, maybe that's one of the strategic influences of introducing GMOs, is because it's not just introducing food, it's introducing patented food that people, it's like a brand. Like, you're not just giving somebody a shirt, you're giving them a Gap shirt or something like that. So it's turning, you know, a corn kernel into not just a corn kernel, but a Monsanto kernel.
That's very true. And the thing that goes along with that is, to build on the analogy of the Gap shirt, it's not just a Gap shirt that you buy and you wear until it wears out. It's a Gap shirt that you buy this year and you have to buy again next year. And you have to buy again the year after that. When you have these, a lot of the, what they call TRIPS agreements, trade-related intellectual property rights, that are enforced by institutions like the WTO and NAFTA and the FTAA and stuff like that. Via those agreements, the biotechnology companies can prevent farmers from saving their seeds. It's the most preposterous thing in the world, but it's actually happening. So Monsanto will sell the farmer seed that is genetically engineered to be resistant to the pesticide that Monsanto also engineers, and then that seed, the farmer will plant, soak with pesticide, the seed grows, and then fruits, and then seeds again, and the farmer is legally not allowed to save those seeds again. He has to buy another round of seeds from Monsanto the next year.
All right. Well, at this point, I'm pretty concerned about the biotech industry. So what is Reclaim the Commons? What does that mean? It just sounds like a term.
Right.
That's,
well,
bring it home for us.
The idea of the commons is an ancient one. And it refers to those things that are our birthright by virtue of being on this planet, the things that are necessary to sustain life, air, water, food, shelter. And in recognition that of the fact that these things have all been privatized and set aside for use by profiteering, we, the people of the world, need to begin standing up, and we have been standing up, but we need to reclaim our right to those commons. We need to reclaim our right to clean air and clean water. We need to reclaim our right to healthy food. We need to reclaim the right of all people to have some amount of shelter to dwell in. And we can move beyond those things into what is necessary for a truly healthy life, decent system of health care, well-preserved cultural heritage, an unpolluted gene pool. And what we're planning on doing in this mobilization is really staking out our claim to the commons of this planet as the people of this planet. And the coalitions that we'll be forging, we hope to continue building on far beyond this mobilization, really hoping that this mobilization can be a touchstone for a larger movement that will seriously be able to not only challenge corporate power, but reclaim the world that's ours, that we were born into. And that's why our website is reclaimthecommons.net, and people can go there and check out more information and try to get plugged in and all that sort of stuff.
Now, who's involved in the Reclaiming the Commons? What type of people are coming together?
Well, there's the usual suspects. There's the anti-corporate globalization activist community, people that have been working on the biodevastation demonstrations for the last, like, 7 or so years that are focused mainly on the biotech and pharmaceutical industries. And then there's coalition building with the different neighborhoods that are struggling with economic and racial justice issues within the Bay Area and Oakland and San Francisco and beyond, because those are all parts of Reclaiming the Commons. Those are all symptoms of the greater problem of corporations and profiteers taking away our right to determine how our communities will look and how our neighborhoods can be productive for everyone involved. So in the final analysis, we're doing outreach to communities that identify as labor, that are struggling to get decent health care provisions for themselves, involved to some extent right now, and hope to with a larger extent with the activist gay community in their struggle for adequate access to AIDS medication. And so then we're also forging community with the people that'll be demonstrating against the G8 in Georgia, in Atlanta, and the people that'll be in the streets at the Republican National Convention demonstrating against Empire at the end of August. All of these sorts of things.
How about farm workers throughout California? I know California is a major agricultural state.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. The farm workers that are going to be doused by pesticides, if Monsanto has its way, are absolutely being contacted and outreached to, and all that sort of fantastic stuff. So there's some good coalition building going on right now. It's the early stages of it, so I can't say that, like, yes, the UFCW are signed on to this coalition, but mm-hmm. That's the vision.
Now, would you say that you have a good, you as in the people that are organizing this coalition? I consider myself to be one of them just by being on this micro radio broadcast right now.
Sure.
Would you say that we're at a good stage of organizing this? Is this kind of like a last minute thing we're throwing together, or do we really kind of, like, how is this going to be different from, let's say, the mobilization in Miami or the mobilization in Sacramento, or how will it be similar?
No. Right. Well, we have a great lead time on this. You know, it's just the beginning of March. The main mobilization is going to be in June, and people have been talking about it for months and months. So the great thing about this is, first of all, that it's going to be in San Francisco, which is so much different than organizing in Cancun or Miami. You know, there's a supportive community there. There's people that are, a friend of mine termed it the sort of bubble for consciousness in the United States. So there's going to be different actions leading up to the mobilization that will be really wonderful. And that's the other nice thing about it. The theme being Reclaim the Commons is we don't have to wait for their conference to show up to start doing the work that we want to do. People are working on community gardens beforehand and working on different ways of reclaiming city intersections to make them more productive and more inviting. So there's going to be some great stuff in the lead up, and there'll be it's looking like it'll be a really fantastic week of action and solidarity building when June actually does roll around. So we're actually working on a broadsheet that's going to be coming out, 16 pages of different issues around this mobilization, and that should be out in the next couple of weeks, which puts us ahead of where we were in Sacramento last year. And the other great thing is
now,
that
where will people be able to get that 16 pages? Now, that's not the type of thing you hand to somebody going out of an event, is it?
Yeah, it is. We'll be handing them out at the March 20th anti-war marches in San Francisco. There's a Genetic Engineering Action Network conference in San Francisco the week before, where they will be being delivered. And if folks feel like they can distribute a lot of them in their home communities, they can get a hold of us at the reclaimthecommons.net homepage and request for some to be sent out or distributed, and we can go from there. People could also contact me at metal, M-E-D-D-L-E, at riseup.net if they wanted to help distribute, you know, those broadsheets or posters or postcards. designing all of those sorts of things. And the other really great thing we have going for this mobilization is it's an election year, and so people are start to get more concerned about politics outside of the radical community. And it's also, you know, things like the Mendocino Initiative and the thing happening in Vermont and the and people. There was actually an article in the paper today about a scientific study that found out about negative impacts of genetically modified foods in the Philippines on some indigenous peoples there. And so it's really the debate's starting to heat up. People are starting to be aware of it. If things go as planned, we'll really be able to not only make great strides in our quest to create a genetically a United States agriculture free of genetically modified foods, but also be able to pull those people into the broader issue of how do we end the corporate power structure that's happened in our country in the last 100 years.
Yeah, good question. I know there's also a new website out, www.calgefree.org.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know about that one?
I know of it. It's been around for a little while. It's not specific to this mobilization, but it's got great information about what's going on in California and the, well, you know, like its title suggests, struggle for freeing us from GE influence.
Could you talk a little bit about Miami? Were you in Miami for the...
I was in Miami, yeah.
...meeting against the Free Trade Area of the Americas. Now, were you at the Community Gardening Project on November 19th?
I actually wasn't there. I helped organize it. The group I work with is the Green Block, Sonoma County.
Oh, okay.
My affinity group. The community garden there was seen as a way not only of giving the activists that were involved in the mobilization something constructive to do and a way for them to connect with the earth and sort of literally ground themselves in what was a very paranoid environment, but it was also, you know, a fantastic way of showing the community that we're not just a bunch of people here to say, like, we're really, really angry at the FTAA and, you know, we're very scary individuals that you wouldn't want to see in a dark alley. It's like, hey, we're gardeners, and we're people that want a better earth, and we're people that believe in local neighborhoods being able to provide for themselves, and community gardens are a great step towards that. So in helping to prepare for that was a really, really wonderful opportunity. It was really great to be able to mingle with the local community that that worked there. And then another Green Block person from Los Angeles, who's also involved in this mobilization, somehow acquired 100 cherry trees. And on the 19th, people went out throughout the community that the garden was being planted in, which was and did, you know, outreach and just said, like, hey, this is why we're here. This is what the FTAA is. We hope that, you know, we don't bring any police violence down in this neighborhood, because the neighborhood was one of the poorest neighborhoods in Miami. It was predominantly people of color, and we wanted to be very conscious about the fact that, like, as we go there and the police violence happens, we want to be very conscious of the fact that the local community could seriously bear some harsh repercussions for that. So we wanted to do some outreach and create some solidarity with those folks so they knew why we were there in the first place.
I understand that there's been a propagation party or two that's taken place in Sonoma or the North Bay area. Do you know about that in regards to this coming mobilization?
Yes. Planting party to propagate plants for the protests. Oh. There have been two of those. I took part in one of them. And it's really just stemming from the fact that we know that we're going to need, if we really want to green San Francisco, if we really want to make this mobilization an example of how people can really start reclaiming the commons, can really start building the world that we've all said was possible for so many years, we're going to need thousands upon thousands of plants. And so it's the beginning of the planting season, and people are getting together and propagating everything from fig trees to lavender. It should make for a very, very colorful, very green, very welcoming mobilization.
So when are the meetings for people that want to get involved? I know I want to go to a meeting. I want to get involved. I want my voice to be heard. I don't necessarily just want to see a protest that's other people's ideas. I want to have my say in what goes on and which intersections become gardens, etc.
Right. Well, for people that are in the Bay Area, we're meeting every other Monday night on alternating sides of the Bay. So, again, that you can get on ReclaimTheCommons.net to get a schedule of those. And there's also listserv that you can get onto from them that'll keep you posted. But so
that's through riseup.net, and you could just search for sf.j8 to join that listserv?
Yeah, if you go to lists.riseup.net and type in SF June 8th or Reclaim the Commons, you should be able to find it. So, yeah, so we're meeting on alternate sides of the bay on Monday nights. We're also doing a lot of organizing via work groups that have been having a lot of planning meetings via conference calls. So people from Santa Cruz and Portland and Vancouver can all plug in and be part of the decision-making processes. Another thing that we're doing as part of this mobilization is we've put together a mobile education group that can come to places like Santa Cruz and, you know, Seattle and, you know, everything like that. Do both background information on what the issues surrounding the conference are, as well as a training in permaculture and nonviolent direct action training as a means of coalescing local communities. And then we're having a spokes council meeting at the beginning of May in San Francisco. So the hope is that we can do some of these educational outreach trips, I guess pun intended, propagate the mobilization, and then bring together different people's ideas on the weekend of May 1st and really decide what the city will look like on June 4th through 9th.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Metal. Any final words?
Just hope, you know, if people want to get involved, they can, and anything else we talked about was too complicated, they can always drop me an email, meddle@riseup.net. I can try to put you in touch with the listserv and the website and all that sort of stuff. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about this. I hope we'll see everybody long before June 8th, but also in the streets on June 8th.